What is the main message you are intending to give to your audience this Thursday at the Greek Centre?
The main message I'd like to give those who attend Thursday's seminar is that the making of a Greek-Australian identity in the early part of the 20th century was very much linked to the politics of the society in which they were living in. And the society to which early Greek settlers were living in was White Australia. So in many ways, I'd like to send a message to the audience that it is now time to reinterpret narratives of contribution and assimilation in Greek Australian history and better articulate the process of what it means to be Greek Australian.
It's quite a complex question though, isn't it? For one to be able to find their identity somewhere very far away from where their ancestors were from.
Yeah, so it is a complex question, certainly, to try and understand how a group situated themselves within a country that's far removed from where they were from. However, my research, which looks at how early Greek Australian leaders articulated a place for themselves and their countrymen in White Australia, has revealed some interesting nuances, that is, some interesting points that allowed them to connect to Australia.
You are an Australian-born Greek with a combined Castellaresian and Cypriot heritage. So are you a second or third generation?
Another good complicated question.
Yeah.
My yaya's family on my father's side came to Australia in the 1920s, and my yaya married a man from Gastelorizo, the same island that she was from, in the 1940s. So in one sense, I'm third and second generation on my father's side. However, my mother came to Australia from Gypros in the 1970s and married my father. So in one sense, I'm second and third generation, and in another sense, I'm first generation Greek Australian. Within my family, I would say, something that has perplexed me for some time is how, after this long historical period, no intermarriage occurred. Gastelorizo is an island of Greek ethnicity that is also quite removed from the politics of the Greek state, as is Cyprus. That is, the two islands have very distinct Greek identities that don't necessarily play into the nationalist politics of, say, the Peloponnesos, Crete, or Athena.
So you are a product of that, as I said, combination of Castellorizian and Cypriot heritage. And being a doctoral candidate at La Trobe University, you're also a lecturer at the Australian Catholic University and La Trobe University, teaching core subjects which focus on the historical processes of Australian and global migration. What was it that actually instigated or triggered your interest and involvement in that area of study?
It's a good question and something that I often have to keep asking myself. I think the first answer I would like to give is by way of a little anecdote or a little story, and that is in my first year of university at La Trobe, I grew up in Canberra and moved to Melbourne for my studies. A tutor pulled me to the side and asked if I knew a man called Stan. I said, yes, that's the name of my father. This man, who was quite elderly, who was my tutor, told me that he had taught my dad in the 70s at La Trobe, and that my dad came into the room one day to tell everyone that his name was no longer Stanley Peters, and that he had decided to re-Hellenize his name to Anastasios Piperoglou.
You're saying that he went back to, he transformed back to his roots?
Yes. Although I think his roots were always there, but he made a very conscious choice to say, during the multicultural movement, he now had an ability to be proud of his Greekness, and it was no longer something that had to be hidden behind closed doors. This, of course, is a man who grew up in fish and chip shops across Melbourne. So growing up for him as Stanley Peters meant that he had to conform and assimilate to the Anglo-centric culture that Australia had in the 1950s and 60s. But by the 1970s, with a cultural movement of multiculturalism, he was able to, yes, resituate himself in society and be proud of the distinctiveness of his ethnicity. But I'm also very interested in teaching stories of migration, or what I would call movements of mobility. That is, people move in all kinds of ways across the world. The patterns by which they move is not necessarily what we may assume to be and what is written in the old histories. So that is, to have come from Greece to Australia in the early 20th century was not necessarily a movement from Greece to Australia. If we take the Ithacan and Kithiran Ionian experience, many of the parents of that first wave migration would have lived under a British colonial environment, what was called the Ionian States, the United States of the Ionian Islands, which was a British protectorate.
So they brought all those influences when they migrated here. Is that, that's what you're saying?
Indeed I am. I'm saying that they were very conscious. They had a very strong awareness of what it meant to live in a British-governed society.
So the society here, the Australian society, would have had a lot to learn from these people about their identities since they were influenced by the British.
Certainly, whether they had a lot to learn is one question that remains to be answered. But certainly the ties between Greece and Britain were so strong, that is, the Philhellenic ties. What Greece meant to Britain and what Greece meant to Europe in the 19th century was profound. So many of the early Australian legislators who instituted White Australia, the exclusionary politics that chose to, by and large, remove Asian people from the cultural confines of Australia, many of those legislators were educated in the classics. And so Greece and Greeks had a problematic dual perception within the British mindset. On one level, they were the archetypal European people. They were a race that could claim civilizational heritage to the beginnings of Western civilization. But on another level, they were not necessarily white enough to be included within the Anglo-centric parameters of Australia. It is this duality of perceptions that I find extremely interesting in the reason being which that how do people manage to live within an in-between status? How is it that the hyphenated identity, that is the hyphen between the Greek and the Australian, comes into being, and what advantages and disadvantages does this in-between status give a group? At one level, they reject and rework their cultural identity from Greece. On another level, these early settlers, and maybe those of subsequent generations after the post-war era, reject aspects of their culture. And it is this interplay that is sometimes conscious and often a fluid process that is never really able to be defined concretely that I find very interesting in terms of better being able to better move to better situate the story of Greeks in the early history of Australia and move it away from a narrative of mere contribution and assimilation.
Mr. Piperoglou, you have successfully applied innovative hands-on teaching methods which encourage students to critically explore the historical complexities associated with human mobility and identity formation. Can you elaborate a little bit on that and tell us how do you go about doing that?
Sure. One assignment I often give my students is to investigate the story of one of their ancestors. And that may mean their parents, their grandparents, or someone more further removed in their story of migration. That is, everyone in Australia has a migration story to tell, and that migration story is, I think the important thing is to say that there is, technology has made us our ability to uncover our past a whole lot easier.
In what way?
For example, there is a website called Trove. Some of your listeners may have discovered it. It is the database of the National Library of Australia, which has digitised an extensive amount of newspaper records. So by a simple word search, students are able to type in the names of their family members and try and track the moment of arrival, the particular politics of the era to which they arrived in, and begin to better interpret how this story, better interpret their story into Australia. This gives them a tremendous amount of agency to students and allows them to say that they can touch and engage with history. History that is no longer just the dry history books that sit on the shelves. Of course, I encourage them to read those books too. But it gives people a tremendous amount of power to touch that past and to interpret it for their own selves. It allows them to reinterpret their identity.
To find more information about themselves, tracing their DNA in a way.
Yeah, exactly. They trace their DNA. They're given a power to traverse through the past in a way that was not possible before. It also allows them to, in themselves, rework what it might mean to be part of an engaged, critical, you could say, academic culture, which says, hey, my story is a complicated story, as most stories of migration are, and that complicated story is an important story which adds value to the diversity of Australian society.